Good morning, everybody. Here we are live for our sins. It's 6:02 in the morning on a, what is it, fucking Wednesday. It is almost the end of January, which is good because fuck, this month feels like it's 79
dragging
days. Yes. Really? I mean, honestly. So I've got Warris here, which is always a fantastic pleasure and a great way to start my day. And just in case you don't know, he's got his own show as well. So it's very nice of him to come and spend some time with us this morning.
Yes, which actually hasn't kicked off yet for the year.
I know. No, that's one of the reasons we needed to get you on. But the other reason.
So I was like, you know what, let me go there because I need someone to talk.
Let me just remind people I'm
alive. Yeah, exactly.
So one of the other reasons I needed to get you here today is because we haven't spoken since before the elections.
Yeah.
And now Trump is the most popular president so far in the ratings of the 20th century and the 21st century.
And understandably so.
Which is the only time they've ever measured the ratings of a president.
Yeah.
Approval ratings, that is. And he's more popular in his first week of being president the second time around than he was at any stage as president the first time.
In his first term.
I mean, it's amazing, right?
It is. And also, you know what I love to
see? Even though he's doing all these really, really dangerous, terrible things that everybody's
shocking. Can you believe it? As though he didn't promise to do these things on the campaign trail. But anyway. What I love seeing is that, like, even the people who used to hate him are, like, kind of forced to love him because it's at the point now where any of the media or journalists who say something negative about Trump literally get looked at like, can't be serious.
What era are you living
exactly.
in?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I was watching this exchange with the journalist and have you seen his new press secretary?
Oh, she's fantastic.
She's so great.
I watched a little bit last night. Like, I thought he'd struggle to get someone as good as Kayleigh McEnany,
yes.
who was the last one.
I actually
one.
Thought Kayleigh would make a return.
I thought she'd come back. But I think she's doing a lot of cool things in entertainment. She's got her own show.
Yeah, she's got her own show on Fox News.
And it's
like full-time
I think
mom
being
vibes.
A White House press secretary is a horrible job. But it's never been such a horrible job as it was with this.
With KJP.
Oh, wow. Karine Jean-Pierre. I mean, what a terrible White House press secretary
that was. The first black lesbian queer.
And look how she's ruined it for all those groups, right? So she's ruined it for all of them. Like, this is the problem with this kind of thing. Is like, the minute you are the first whatever it is, except for first human. If you're the first human to the moon, lekker, then that's great. We celebrate you. And we should. But if you're the first any subgroup.
Yeah, box ticker.
Then you have so much weight on your shoulders. And I think it's hugely unfair because what people will say afterwards, whether they are prejudiced or not, they're going to say, yeah, she was the first, but she wasn't very good.
Exactly.
And then what that does is the next time that anyone black or female or lesbian comes in to do that job, they're going to have so much more pressure on them because now they've got to prove that it's not a pattern. Right?
100%. And it's also like where, your credibility is just completely shot.
This is where ugly fucking stereotypes do come from. And the people who don't like the stereotypes are the ones who create this cuck. Right?
KJP, if you notice, right till the end, sort of played that card that, you know what, as the first, what a fantastic time I had under the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. And look at the work that we achieved.
Yep.
So it's like almost till the death. You are in denial of the fact that you were an absolute disaster.
No, that was her
also
thing.
Like, and it's not completely her fault. You know, she was the press secretary of the Biden administration.
I mean, can you imagine?
What a terrible position to be in because you're standing up there and they're like, yo, this withdrawal from Afghanistan was terrible. And you're like, you know, not exactly. You're flicking through your pages there. There's fuck all in that book. It was cuck. You need to just say, it was cuck. Next question.
And the guy you're the spokesperson for is half asleep.
Half asleep. I mean, and you've got to come there and say, he is so sharp behind the scenes, I promise you. And it's like,
a horrible job. Look, I don't know how. Some left-wing network will probably give her a job somewhere. And it's not like she's never going to be employed. But pretty much her job was lying to your face for 4 years, which is it's a horrible position to put anyone in, right?
And lying about indefensible things. It's cool when you can lie and it's an easy cover.
And for a president who will go down in history as like one of the worst ever.
Who possibly the worst ever.
He's certainly the worst living one because Jimmy Carter's dead. So
But he made it to voting day. Did you see that?
Well, there would have been a lot of dead people. Even in this country, you sometimes make it to voting day.
Like, God rest his soul, but he looked like a corpse. And they're like, Jimmy Carter just cast these votes. Like, everybody sees that except Jimmy Carter. He doesn't even know who he is.
So we'll get into some of this because I think there's a lot to talk about here. We also have to talk about the Janusz Walus interview, which I saw you commenting on. And I was like, wow, we got to talk about that too. Lots of people very, very interested in that story.
And lots of people like really upset. It's just like, guys, didn't you know this is what it was going to be? Yeah, I knew before the time.
But also, you know, I just don't think, and speaking about being really upset, I don't know if you saw Selena Gomez's video.
Oh, I did.
I don't know. James, if you can find the actual video, because it's so embarrassing and it's worth playing, because I think the days of going online, filming yourself, first of all, online having an emotional outburst, those days are over. It's bad.
Yeah. Posting it, it kind of makes it seem like you did this on purpose.
And you did it for you, not for anyone else.
Exactly.
Like, there's something, and she's crying and wailing and like, she's a disaster, right?
Yeah, Bruce, she was having a proper breakdown.
It would have been better.
That was not about illegal migrants.
No, it would have been better also if she just never made it. I like, who films themselves doing that and then goes, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this on the internet because people think I'm really compassionate. She tried to take it down. She couldn't get it. Too late because the internet remembers everything.
Yeah.
And it's bad for a number of reasons. It's bad because she looks unhinged. Second of all, you know that it's all a performance, right?
100%.
I know she's an actress, and I've got to give her some points for looking truly upset, because sometimes
she probably was truly upset. Sure. What I dispute is whether she's truly upset about the migrants or whether she's truly a crazy bitch. You know what I mean? Like, she could be upset about a vast array of things. If you followed the Selena Gomez story, it becomes like, you know what, Selena, get help. Because if it's a real cry,
yeah.
You know, if you are crying at that level,
as you say, you must get real help.
Yes.
And being on the internet breaking down is a terrible place.
She's become a meme now. You've just made yourself Michael Jordan 2.0. Because now people are freezing certain frames where she looks like.
It's bad. So bad. And you think, you know, you've probably got a billion. She's probably got $1 billion. She was the most followed person on social media.
Yes, she was the most followed person on Instagram.
And I think that it's over for people who want to emote on camera. It's just enough.
Also, because you made a good point that people know what went into me seeing this video. So you sat down, okay? You gave something a good old think, and then you set up your phone, and then you obviously had to like hit record like on some.
Can I tell you what?
Go.
I'd be embarrassed. You know, I can't. I feel embarrassed. Maybe it's just because I'm old, but I feel embarrassed taking a selfie. Yeah. Okay. Obviously, at a concert or something, different story. And I want to hear from you how the concert was over the weekend, because you were there as well.
Oh, Green Day.
Yeah.
Power. Yeah.
Here we go. Look, here she is. Yeah.
Watch the hand.
Sorry. Look at this. Only people are getting attacked. The children.
Lost.
I don't understand.
These people have frozen them.
I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do.
It's just, you know what I mean? Is there any tears there? I didn't actually see a tear.
I didn't recognize her at first.
She
has no makeup on. She looks terrible.
She's pulling cry face.
It's bad.
Yeah, shame.
Listen.
Look, her nails would look nice, though. I mean, a manicure's in, bro. Love it.
The only thing that could make that worse is if she was a man crying. No one ever wants to see a man crying, right? So it's slightly less embarrassing if you're a woman crying, but that's still so terrible.
Yeah. But also, I mean, if you listen to what she's saying, right? She's like, I'm so sorry for all the families, and I wish there was something I could do. Now, my question is, when you set up your camera, have the good old cry, record that whole thing, the stuff that you're saying, what do you expect people to respond to that and say? So what do you comment there?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
Hey, don't worry about it. Fucking stay strong. We're praying for you. Like, what are the comments that she would typically expect to get on a video where she says, I wish I could do something about it?
Well, here's
like, shut the fuck up. You know you can't do anything. Tom Holman is here, bitch, and he's kicking people out. There's nothing you can do to stop it. ICE is in the building.
One of my friends said to me yesterday on WhatsApp, Tom Holman looks like one of those English soldiers from the 14 and 1500s used to carry a mace and wear armor on a knight.
Like in London, in the city of London.
And a whistle.
I'm going to go to cut you, chop your fucking head off.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
Like he looks like a knight who would have ridden on horseback and like swung at a Frenchman and taken
chopped
his head
off. Yeah.
That's what he looks like. Yes. Right. And that's the kind of look you want in a border guy.
That is the kind of look you want. To me, he strikes me like he's got like that, like I grew up in Vryheid. And
he's got a look of some of those worms.
Yeah, those worms. Okay. After school, we weren't allowed to be seen in town because obviously it's a small town. Mm. So from the school to the town is like 2 blocks.
Because you're kids or because you weren't white?
No. Because you weren't allowed to be seen in town in school uniform that was not presentable. So say, for example, at school, you were playing soccer at break time and your uniform was dirty.
Yeah, okay.
You know? You couldn't take that uniform and go to Spa and walk around or go buy something. Because if there'd be these worms that would see you and they'd be like they'd put their glasses down or whatever. And then they'd be like, Sian, komiso. And then you come there and then they'll be like, and no, here is ni nekis ni word. What is your name? And then you'd be like, oh, jammer worm. Jammer meneer.
That's like Tom Holman.
Bro, you'd get to school the next day and Mr. Nwemi, the principal, would have been informed
by the worm.
That worm, Sorrel, called the school and said, listen, I saw Garrett and he was so untidy. His shirt was tucked out.
That you your squirrel slap.
Yes, he just has that disciplined face where this man is a stranger. But you as a child, you feel like, I'm going to give this guy my name. I could have lied. I could have said, my name is Garrett Cliff.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and the next day, Garrett would get into cut. But you dared not lie because there's just this face that you kind of like respect. Like, he's not going to take shit. And the way he answers, bro, he's so monotonous. He doesn't raise his voice. He doesn't start getting emotional and crying. No. He's just like.
And there's a funny thing that's going on. Like the Democrats and a lot of people in the media, but I repeat myself, say, you know, are you going after the criminal ones or the ones who are just here illegally?
Or the violent offenders.
Guys,
yeah,
they're here illegally, therefore they are criminals.
that
it's not like the murderous rapey one is worse than the one who
crossed the border
to trade drugs or whatever. It's like, they don't understand.
I'm a big fan of categories, okay? Like, I feel like...
This is why people hate you on X.
Yes, they hate me because I feel like what we've done, and actually just remind me of this, but I saw this with News 24, our faves.
Oh, yes.
But categories are important, and I understand where the Dem reporters and the journalists are coming from. Because they recognize that categories are important now.
Yes, finally.
Finally, because, you know, in previous years, they've kind of just treated, you know, they've painted everybody with the same brush.
Yeah.
Now what they're doing is they are trying to categorize illegal immigrants.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I think it was so clever and so sharp of the Republican side, the Tom Holmans, the new press secretary, because often what the mainstream media does is they jump onto these catchphrases. And they jump onto these terms like, you know, illegal immigrants or illegal criminals.
Or the dreamers.
Dreamers who came here chasing the American dream.
Right.
Like they tell this whole narrative that these people are good, innocent future doctors.
Yeah.
You know, like Douglas Murray always speaks about. It's like not everybody coming in here is going to become a rocket scientist. Man. These people are not rocket scientists. They're working at their uncle's shop and it's a fuck up. So... They've done well to dispel any of that nonsense. I think you're referring to the exchange where, like, his exact question was, Trump has said that they're going to go after the violent offenders first.
Right.
Are we just going to skip those now and go straight for the you know, the undocumented. And she's like, yo.
We're still going to get the ones who are there illegally. Yes. That's his plan.
Oh, you can't leave the others behind and be like, I'll come back for you guys. And then you leave Sandton to go and fetch others in the south. No. You take everything that's in Sandton and load them in the bus. Sorry, guys. Like, this isn't hard.
All right. So going back to Selena, though, the other thing that she says there that's quite interesting is she's like, I want to apologize to my people. I'm like, but hang on, honey. You're American.
Yeah.
So what are you talking about your people? You know, this always confuses the hell out of me. Like, you've done pretty well out of America, yeah. Selena.
What people are you referring to? Yeah,
who are your people? It's like, what else does America have to do for you before you'll consider it your people?
Yeah.
I mean, you were born
before you'll consider it your home.
She was born there.
She was born and raised there.
She was born there. She was raised there. She's got, like, I think she's an Italian parent and a Mexican parent or something like that.
She's got some Mexican lineage and a Mexican surname.
But for some reason in her head, she's still associating herself with being, in this case, Mexican.
Mm.
I mean, if it was Italian immigrants, maybe she would say, I'm associating myself with them.
Mm.
Who knows? But there's something wrong in her head.
It's the same. It's the Elizabeth Warren thinking, where she's associating herself with Native Americans because there's a drop of Native American.
Chief Squaw.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren.
I've never identified with you guys, ever. But now I'm going to decide to because I can score points for it. Listen, what I would say to Selena is, I know what you're thinking. I used to do that when I was colored. But
when you work don't do it, bro. When you work at it. Like,
you can't come up on some, yo, my people. Don't do that.
Well, the funny thing is individual. Those Mexicans look at her and they go, well, I got nothing in common with you.
Of course. You know, they did it
One of us is probably cleaning your house. That's what they say.
There's a popular boxer, right, named Ryan Garcia.
Yeah.
And he sort of tried it at some point and then he reversed himself because what he was doing was he was training under Canelo's camp. It was a while ago, but if I remember correctly. And he was like, yeah, man. Mexican boxers are you know who we are, that Mexican blood, whatever. And the Mexicans came out and said, man, sorry, son, but you are not born in Canelo is from Mexico type of thing. And you are American. Stop fucking saying Mexican.
Can hate us, but you ain't us.
Yes. And don't claim it when you don't, you know, like you kind of need to be born there and raised there.
Yeah, but I see a lot of that happening even here. I mean, like you have, whenever a politician in this country wants to turn it on,
yeah,
then they're like my people. They could be as broad as like black or white, right?
Yes.
They could be as broad as like Zulu, Xhosa. Mm. You see that this shit being pulled out.
Usually, it's or race, sometimes tribalism.
Or sometimes they pull the like, I'm Kwanazi from here. You know, these are my people.
Mm. In order to get votes,
yeah, exactly. Speaking so you know how it goes. I mean, like we should just really most of the time ignore those people. I mean, on Monday we had a guy called Alex here, who's German, South Africa. He was born in South Africa, but he's of German descent. He doesn't go and hang around with the Germans every weekend and only do German shit. He's South African. And the week before that, we had a guy called Nico Tamaides. He's a Greek South African.
Mm.
He does a lot of Greek shit, but he's South African. Like we should all get over ourselves and make ourselves – you're here whether you like it or not, right?
Yes, and you're South African
here.
First.
Make your contribution go somewhere you really want to be and become that.
Mm.
It's like those people who, you know, they keep supporting the Blue Bulls, but they live in Chicago.
Yes,
different
yes,
kind
yes.
of Bulls there. Yeah,
yeah sure. right?
Different Bulls. So, all right. The we've got to talk about this Janusz Walus thing because that's how we brought up Selena Gomez. So this is probably one of the biggest interviews. And I've got to give Annika Larsson credit. I don't know who's helping her put that show together, whether anyone is, whether she's producing it herself, who knows. But that woman is getting like some of the best interviews.
Mm.
She set herself up. She doesn't do one all the time, but when she does one, it's good. You know, it counts. And this week they released the recordings. I don't know whether she went to Poland to sit with Janusz Walus.
I think she went to Poland.
I haven't watched the whole thing either, so I'm not really in a position to be able to comment on it comprehensively. But it's caused endless amounts of shit because seemingly this guy, who remember, Janusz Walus is the Polish guy who worked with, what was his name,
Clive Darby Lewis.
And nobody really knows who else, but Gay Darby Lewis, his wife was involved too. And Janusz Walus is the guy who pulled the trigger on Chris Hani. Now, he says, interestingly, and I read a book about this that Justice Malala had written just a short while ago. Because it's, what, 25 years?
1992.
It was 92 when this happened. So that's about 25, 27 years.
No, isn't it? That's like 30
a long time
years,
ago. But it was around this time of year, if I remember, too. Either way, I mean, you can correct my maths anytime you like. I'm always happy to hear it.
James, how much is that?
Yeah, how much? Do a quick calculation for us.
I think it's 33 years.
My maths is absolutely
terrible.
Yeah,
so 2012.
If we minus 2012, minus 1992 from 2025.
33 years.
33. Mm. Thank you. Yes, I'm glad I'm not the guy who works out the change.
We were skating in. Lucky you don't sit in front in a taxi. All you'd be thrown out.
So anyway, this book that Justice wrote last year and released, and I interviewed him about it. You know, it was a big moment in South Africa because Chris Hani was kind of the up-and-coming revolutionary within the movement. Nelson Mandela was the old statesman, and he was the guy who kind of held it all together during that shit because people were ready to go head-to-head.
Things were tense.
It was the closest, I think, South Africa came to any kind of out-and-out civil war or certainly any sort of meaningful mass violent occasion after 1994 or before. And there was a lot of tension. Everything was up in the air. And he says he drove past. He was doing like a recce. Drove past Chris Hani's house.
Janusz,
and he saw him there, and he thought, "I'm going to go for it."
Fuck off.
Unemotional, right? The guy's like unemotionally. He says, "She asks him, where did you shoot him?" He's like, "Once in the head, and then in the stomach, and then in the head again." I mean, he's like cold as ice. This guy, and you could see there's no, despite being in prison for much of those 32 years, this guy has no remorse. Like he's which. To some people is unconscionable, right? And I understand that because you'd expect someone to have a little bit of remorse after 30-odd years in prison.
And also kind of, you know, seeing like what
even
consequences your actions
Eugene
had.
Eugene de Kock, and, you know, we've often had Candace Mama on the show, and her father was killed by Eugene de Kock. And he asked to meet the family. He said sorry to them. There were tears. He said he's never going to be forgiven. He doesn't expect forgiveness from them. Candace forgave him, even though, you know, as a young girl, it changed her whole life and not for
losing
the better.
Her dad, exactly.
Yeah, so you kind of, when you're faced with someone who's just doesn't give a shit, they're just those cold, horrible shit people. It for some people, it's inexplicable, right? And then people are saying, no, we should have kept him in prison.
You should have died there. I saw a lot of comments like that.
But I don't know. I mean, he's done his time. And he doesn't give a shit. What's it going to help to keep him in jail? He clearly didn't have the worst time because he's still alive. I mean, you'd think someone like that would have been killed in prison.
He was isolated from General Pop.
Whatever happened, the guy is still alive. So Tabo says, kudos to Annika. I do feel she left out some of the key questions. Well, she is the only person, I think, who's got to speak to him. And it's just interesting to me that this is, you said it, this is why I'm thinking of it and why I wanted to have you on the show, is you said this is almost like our JFK moment. You know, because the Americans have been, they've been obsessed with, and they've just released, Trump says, all the remaining JFK files. So maybe we'll eventually get to the bottom of how, we know it was the government in some kind of conspiracy.
We know, but we don't know.
And now hopefully we'll get the details. I mean, I've read books and there have been endless theories. You remember the movie JFK, Oliver Stone,
and back documentaries,
into the left, back into the left, all that kind of shit.
Yes,
I mean,
there's theories that he was shot from the front, like the driver shot him over shoulder.
Which all is, of this shit, but South Africa's version is Chris Hani's assassination, because people have always been saying, whispering, especially within the kind of political circles, and especially within the ANC. Is they say that there were some of their own people involved, and they're not sure who. And Valush said in this interview that apparently Clive Darby Lewis had met with Jacob Zuma, among others.
Of course.
And Jacob Zuma was the kind of ANC chief intel guy.
Intel guy, yeah, true.
So there's a lot more to this.
Look, if anybody was expected to know that this assassination was being planned, The theory is that it should be Jacob Zuma because he was the intelligence guy.
I mean, because I always used to hear rumors about, no, it was Thabo Mbeki.
Yeah, and then there's also rumors that it was Cyril. And then it's kind of like whoever's in the position of leadership.
Choose your past president.
And the thing is, if one knew, all knew, that's my thought on it.
Please, the ANC can't keep secrets.
Yeah, so you understand? I feel buckets, like, you know, this whole theory that Zuma knew but the other Oaks didn't know, I don't buy that. I feel like if Zuma knew, Mbeki knew, Mandela knew, everybody knew. Maybe they didn't know when it's coming. You know what I mean? Or whatever. But if that is your theory, you know, hypothetically speaking, they all knew. Or nobody knew. But, you know, maybe it's also like a little bit of JFK effect in that I was driving past and I checked him outside his house and then I said, hey, let me fucking pull out my rifle. And no, that's nonsense.
They were definitely planning.
They were planning it, but, you know, like, I just feel like, you know, to shoot him outside his house, you'd need to know at least what his movements were to a certain degree. And also, didn't he live in Soweto?
No, he was in Benoni.
He was in, okay.
Yeah, he was in Benoni.
You see, I don't even know that. So I'm just looking at the
Dr. Robin says, I remember it, 10th of April, 1993. I remember I was at home on holiday after my first term at varsity and Wits delayed the opening of campus after the holidays because there was so much fury and fear. Meh, says Indy. They destroyed the important files. This could be JFK or Harney because both they would have done the same, right? Destroyed the important files decades ago. It's going to be a nothing burger.
Look, Lee Harvey Oswald was taken out not long after.
Jack Ruby.
By Jack Ruby, who was in turn taken out not long after that. So, you know, Americans kind of clean up the assassinations.
I don't know why, for example, I think it's kind of clear to everybody who killed Bobby, because that was Saran Saran, and there were lots of eyewitnesses.
Oh, Bobby Kennedy, yes.
Yeah, Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s father.
Yes, right? Was also.
He was shot in the kitchen in a hotel in California after he'd made a speech. And we're going to go on and we're going to win in Chicago or whatever he says. And then he walks off the stage with his wife and they walk into, they're going to be taken around the kitchen side of things by security oaks who supposedly know what they're doing.
Well, obviously, you know,
and a guy called Sahan Sahan, who was a Palestinian, that's how he described himself. He's the one who shot him right there and then. And he's, as he was dying, there's been so much reporting on this since then. Because they've got pictures. They've actually got the video of the whole thing happening. It's bizarre, man. You can find all this stuff now.
The Bobby one, I'm not too...
And as Bobby's dying, he's like, is everybody okay? And then...
Is everybody okay? On the video?
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to say there's a video of him saying, the CIA did it. And they edited the audio.
I mean, if I were... And I saw Trump after he'd signed that bill to...
Yeah.
Well, not to bill, declassify. Executive order, right? He says, give this pen to Bobby... Junior. He's like, give it to him.
He's having the best time. he's thoroughly enjoying this moment.
I know people love a little bit of Trump just being an asshole, right? So I saw this today. Jim Acosta is the guy from CNN. He used to be in the White House press briefing room. And Trump used to do a lot of those briefings in the beginning himself. And then he'd go, Jim Acosta. And
Jim would
always ask him like the tough, but he was like being a bit of an asshole and Trump never liked him and he never liked Trump. And Jim has probably spent the last 6 years kind of putting himself up as Trump's alter ego, as his
arch nemesis.
Yeah. The non-Trump, right?
Yes,
in the media.
The anti-Trump.
There we go. So this is what Trump says. Cause now Jim Acosta was moved from his slot on CNN. Cause the ratings are really bad now. Cause everybody as Warris said just a moment ago, everybody's now kind of, you don't want to be too anti-Trump because then you look like you're still living in 2016. So Trump puts out this on his Truth Social. He goes, wow, really good news. Jim Acosta, one of the worst and most dishonest reporters in journalistic history, a major sleaze bag, has been relegated by CNN fake news. To the midnight hour, Death Valley, because Death of Valley. Extraordinarily bad ratings and no talent, he says in brackets. Word is that he wants to quit, in capital letters, quit, and that would be even better. Jim is a major loser who will fail no matter where he ends up. Good luck, Jim.
Trump is like, it's the ad libs. Like, that sentence could have been so much shorter.
It's so fun.
But he takes the opportunity to take every dig at. He did one about Selena Gomez. Did you see?
No, what
he's
he
like,
say?
Sorry. Let me find it. But while so I find good. It, I was going to say on Annika Larsson, right? I didn't watch the whole interview either. And I saw from the comments, right? My thing is, I just feel like there was many moments that Annika could have pressed Janusz
yeah.
a bit more.
Yeah.
And it almost seemed, I want to use the word staged for lack of a better word.
Maybe they'd had an agreement before. You're not going to ask.
Yeah, you're not going to ask this. And also the people with whom they had that agreement. Oh. I would like ENCA to disclose. Because I feel like Janusz, whatever his name is, that guy, we had him here in jail for 30 years. A parole condition could have been, listen, brother, you're going to need to tell us the whole truth.
Like with the TRC, where if you told the truth, then you wouldn't be charged.
Yes. Did he not appear in front of the TRC?
I don't know that he did. Yeah, but I don't think he would have had a chance.
He certainly wasn't one of the people that, well, if he didn't, then remember everybody that appeared in front of the TRC supposedly committed whatever crimes they committed for political reasons or under instruction. So it was your opportunity to come and say, listen, I'm flipping color puerta. Yeah. And I only did what I did because my superiors made me. But and also, I thought I'm doing it for this reason.
I mean, wouldn't that have been the move by him? Because then he would have immediately, people would have turned their attention to the guys behind
that. That's
the
it.
Curtain,
yes. Yeah, and save yourself.
The puppeteers.
But what if the puppeteers were the guys putting on the show? You see, now you kind of like, the theories
this is the problem. Okay.
Yeah. The absence, that's why it's JFK-ish.
In the absence of information, we will come up with a conspiracy theory.
Big time.
Right.
And this guy hasn't done anything to dispel any of those conspiracy theories in that interview, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's what people are saying about the declassification of the JFK documents. I was watching Piers Morgan, and one of the commentators he had on said, look, we're going to get all the information that's in this file. And then people are still not going to be satisfied with the information presented because we want to believe that it's this huge conspiracy where perhaps it actually was just what it was.
Yeah.
In the same way, it's like maybe Janusz Wallace was just driving in Benoni.
Lone gunman, maybe. Yeah, maybe he just took a chance.
That's it. And you know? Was completely happy to spend 30 years in jail.
Well, he doesn't look like he's a very emotional dude.
Yeah, dude, he's giving like Winter Soldier vibes. Have you watched the Winter Soldier? You're Captain
That's
America.
Exactly right.
They read this like these six words like Manchurian Candidate, and then he's like, whatever, I'm ready to comply in fucking Russian, and he's got a fake arm.
Mm.
And then, you know, in the Marvel universe, he's this guy that's like a ghost. That's what Janusz is giving me because he just sat there cold as fuck, emotionless, zero remorse.
Yeah.
And he's also not
really... I wonder
really,
if he's like raised by wolves or something.
Yeah, well, he's Polish. This is what Trump said, right?
What did he say?
On Selena Gomez. He says, many Hollywood liberals have taken our actions to secure the border very personally and are no doubt surprised that the government finally did something after years of inaction. Actress Selena Gomez... best known as the third amigo on that murder mystery show. On that murder mystery show. That Chevy Chase wouldn't touch. Posted a video to social media where she was in tears over the deportations. Selena, these are people who broke the law by coming here. Some have also committed other horrible crimes. I hope Selena is just as upset about the victims of these crimes. Focus on your career. The people want a sequel to Spring Breakers. This is someone's dad.
Oh, he's so entertaining. Fuck, man. He is so entertaining. You know, people have been saying for the longest time, oh, I wish politicians were more real. Oh, I wish politicians would talk just like us. Now they're getting it. Thick and fast. And,
yeah,
and they're not sure whether they
champ.
Like it.
He's the ultimate troll.
He's the best.
Because he doesn't just like take a jab at you. You know, he's such a bully. And he's so petty. That 5 years later, he's remembered
got a grudge. And did you notice the trolling he did with the Colombian
with the Colombian president.
And he puts up a picture of himself dressed like a mobster with a like fedora on. And it says, F-A-F-O.
Yeah,
fuck Fafo. Around and find out. And he's like, that's the president. That's not some comedian on Saturday Night Live. It's the president of the United States.
But when you think about Trump, the character, he's been in entertainment for so many years. So he knows how to like capture the people. And he knows how to be a comedian. Did you see his exchange with the mayor of LA?
Oh, my God.
Then she's like, we promise people are going to get back in their homes, whatever, whatever. And he's sitting there. But you can tell, I don't know if Melania was pinching him under the table. He wanted to go like full scorched earth on this auntie. And then he's like, and the reporter is pushing back on the mayor and is like, okay, but how long? And she's like, we're looking at a week. And he's like, I don't know. A week is a long time.
It's a very long time. And he says something like, you've got a lot of emergency powers. I've already used my emergency powers. You got to use your emergency powers. They're very powerful powers.
I mean, look at this guy. Look at this guy right here. This guy can get his house straightened out. 24 hours, eh?
He says 18 months. This guy over here, 18 months. It's hilarious. He's so comfortable in front of cameras, microphones.
And under pressure.
And, I mean, this guy has been through the ringer. Like, really, the last 4 years, I don't think anyone in politics has had as hard a time as he has. So he's kind of bulletproof now. Literally bulletproof. Yeah, I almost got killed, right? So let's just enjoy the ride. If you really hate him, you've got to get over it. Like, I see Jim Acosta now while we were talking about it. He's posted that same thing and he goes, ooh, looks like someone has Jim Acosta derangement syndrome.
Oh, fuck off, Jim.
Jim, it's not the same thing.
You're not that important.
You're not the same.
He's not the same.
No, and we'll never hear from him again.
Interestingly, you know what I said last year, right? And this is to tie the two. I said that if this is our JFK moment, right? Mm. In terms of Janusz Wallach.
Yes, yeah.
Jacob Zuma is our Trump.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because in that interview that ENCA conducted, Janusz, in my opinion, has got very little credibility as a source of information.
Damn right.
Especially because it's like he only agreed to conduct this interview when he was on Polish soil. And, you know, I was looking at all these things.
Mm.
And then it's also like, okay, here's the interview and the stuff that we really want to know. Like, to be honest with you, I really wasn't expecting. Like, I didn't want to hear that Zuma had a meeting with Clive Darby Lewis, but I don't have the details of that meeting.
No, that doesn't help us. That's like you dangling a fish in front of us.
And it's also like if we consider who Clive Darby Lewis was at the time and who Zuma was at the time.
Uh-huh.
Hey, what's happening there? Yes, I can come with the theory. You know the pictures of Chris Harney of the scene?
Yeah.
Okay? And I've referenced this before on Twitter. And like, it was always such a powerful image for me. Is Tokyo Sekhwale is covering his body.
Yes.
Right? Wearing
a running tracksuit.
Yeah. Okay? No t-shirt underneath. You can tell this dog just got out of bed, put that shit on, and he came over. And he's wearing formal shoes with no socks with this tracksuit. This man is disheveled. His hair is not brushed. He's just like a mess. And he gets there, and he's covering the body. And there's like this expression on his face where if everybody knew that this was going to happen, nobody told Tokyo.
That was for real.
Yes, that was so for real. And then when you think of, you know, who Tokyo Sekhwale became, you know, and you contrast it with this was this guy and now he is Mr. Three-Piece 20,000 rand suit man. You know, he really cleaned up well and he went on to become a billionaire. Yeah. And
Premier of Gauteng for a while.
There we go. And all of the companies that he was involved in and, you know, he certainly found favor. But on the day, covering the body, he knew
he wasn't in on anything.
He definitely wasn't in on it, you know?
For sure.
So, again, it's like, you know, that sort of like caused a lot of doubt. But then for the interview to happen and then for our Zuma is our Trump, in my opinion. They come at that guy, you know. Yeah. Whatever he did and whatever corruption he conducted, they are cool, whatever. And it's my also, whole thing is always stop referring to the 9 wasted years. We are fucking in the LA fires right now.
Well, that's exactly the
and
point.
No one is talking people, about it.
Someone said to me the other day, well, what if the GNU collapses and then Zuma becomes president? I'm like, we've been there before. It was better than now because
it was, dude.
It was, right?
And, like and the devil,
knew,
you know.
We knew he would steal some.
Yeah.
Okay. But then which politicians don't? But at least it wasn't Cyril because the everything's gone to shit since
bad,
then. I'll take what 2009-10 in a heartbeat over what we've got
and
now.
And Cyril is
economically
like
the, and everything else.
Cyril is like the Winter Soldier. He's it's like when he talks like he doesn't know what's going on. He's like the mayor of LA.
I don't think he does.
Bro?
I think he's too busy worrying about his own stuff.
Yes.
To worry about being president.
And that's how, like, you know, while Rome burned, Nero fiddled. The country's on fire. And Cyril is just like.
No, I agree.
And comes sick, home and then he signs the land expropriation bill.
You see, it was very convenient for all those shit people who are still in government to just put all their sins on top of Jacob Zuma and send him into the wilderness.
Yes. Like and a now he's, goat, right? He's now a point of reference. Every interview, everything. But and they Zuma can blame it on you, him. And then
they
it's
can
like, oh,
all
fuck
blame
off,
him.
Man.
I've had enough.
Yes.
I'm with you.
Just blame Zuma.
I did see that Duduzile is going to court this week.
Yes, I tweeted about that. People attacked me and said we're dating. She's my girlfriend. I was like, oh, fuck off. Yeah, for the July Andres. And I was like, oh, you know, fucking yawn fest. You know, sorry, but, you know, like, you know me, Gareth. Who the fuck is? We don't care. The country is burning now. We have other priorities. More important stuff to deal with. Yeah. And I feel like at the time of July, and like I refuse to believe that because Duduzile said so, people were going into Checkers and, you know what I mean, eating cakes.
I mean, they didn't listen to her time. So why would they have listened to her then?
It was if you understand, you know, the madness of crowds. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you read that book.
Yep.
Then you'll understand why the looting happened and continues to happen. You know, I follow a guy, his name's K9 Reaper, and I chat to him on DM. He's one of those, like, you know, like he's a man of action. He's action oak, bro. He's out with the fucking guys recovering hijacked vehicles and settling this unrest and that unrest, that spiking that was happening on the N2 or whatever. What's that highway? N14. They were there. He's that oak. And he always posts these videos of, you know, along Van Rienen's pass, you know, between here and Durban, essentially. Trucks get stuck there on the uphills. And when trucks get stuck, those trucks get looted. Now, Duduzile is not telling those people to go and steal the meat or the fucking
fact,
potatoes on
the
truck.
Funny thing is that a truck will break down on this part of the N3 where no one is for miles. And as soon as they fight, like, I don't know how it happens. They come out of the ground or whatever. But that stuff is gone. It's gone within 15 minutes. It's amazing. Like you want to talk about a total clear out, right?
Yeah.
if we told those people, we put them on a plane, told them that in the Pacific Palisades, under all the ash, there's some gold.
There's something.
They clear that fucking place
gold.
Up.
Gold. You tell them there's beer. You tell them there's Black Label quartz.
They clear it
flatten
up.
Flatten that place. And it's like, look, I get it. You know, like my thing is, and this is, I always say to people, the people I feel worst for, when these top-down things happen, you know, like when decisions are made at the top, like halting U.S. aid.
Yeah,
it's honestly the poor people at the bottom.
Of course,
you know,
it is.
They're
the ones who suffer.
Yeah, bro, like big time. And when you actually see it, you know, like you don't just read about it on Twitter. When you see those people, like when I read the USAID headline about, you know, Trump is now halting all USAID, and News 24 then took the stance that, oh, look at Trump. He doesn't want people to get their ARVs.
Yeah.
Millions depend on it. Now they're going to die.
By the way, I got it wrong. I got community noted because I thought it was 100% of all our ARVs are provided by
Trump. No. I think it's like 30
turns out it's
something.
Like 25% or whatever. But the point is, we're still reliant. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Otherwise, 25% of the people who are currently reliant on that are not going to be around for very long.
Yeah, so, fair enough. But, you know, if I can direct you to another policy point that Trump made was, he started Doge, which was supposed to be Elon and Vivek.
Yeah.
And the idea behind Doge was across the board, America needs to start looking at where it spends its money.
Where it's wasting money.
Thank you.
Now, wouldn't it be nice if we look at that? Wouldn't it be, you know how much money we would have for ARVs if we just found a way to stop the stealing and the wastage? Thank you.
Now, why are we pretending as News 24 that all of that funding that comes here literally goes to ARVs and TB medication? Fuck off.
It's all these NGOs. That it gets to, thank you. We know that they're these crooked NGOs who are trying to influence all kinds of things, including politics in this country. It's enough.
And they know very well, okay, that a lot of the money is stolen. So guess what the NGOs are doing? They're coming out and they are defending this nonsense.
No, but they're also saying to their friends in the media, you've got to help us because we need this money.
Yes. I retweeted a thread which basically said, obviously now I can't find
it. Listen, we've got to talk travel in a minute.
Yeah.
I want to throw this in because you've brought up a couple of things quickly.
Yeah.
Carl DeSantis says, Cyril has no spine. It also seems like his brain has fallen out of his head. Worst president we've ever had.
She's like Carl.
He's very soft and gentle.
Yeah. And listen, God, let Carl. Me make it clear. I like Cyril as a person. Yeah. He's a fucking awesome timer.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a warm and friendly guy. Yeah. He is.
Like just Jacob Zuma is.
100%. Right? So don't tell me. But you can have your views.
But this is
but
the
like,
problem. Like people who vote because they like somebody
shouldn't
be allowed to vote.
Yeah. But I didn't vote.
Honestly.
I didn't vote for them. No, but I like them as people.
I agree. I know
they're
that.
Like Oaks,
but when when I think of someone I want to make difficult decisions, I don't think of who I'd like to be having a beer with.
Yeah, or going for a walk with on a Sunday morning.
No, it's not my. That's not what you're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Please still greet me, Cyril, if you see me.
Well, yeah, he's now you,
Mr.
Now,
President.
Now he's going to give you the
gonna
cold,
ignore
cold
me
shoulder.
And bodyguards on.
So, all right, listen, we do something called the window seat. We've been doing this for a while now with travel.co.za. It gives us a chance to check in on some useful and interesting and awesome information that will help you to plan your travel better. And also, if you run a company, and this is what we're going to do today, you run a company and you guys have to send a lot of people on trips, business trips, conferences. Maybe you're organizing incentives for the people who work for you. And this is a big deal in many big South African corporations. You need to do it right because obviously there are ways to do it that are easy and there are ways to do it that are hard. And just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about how if your holiday gets canceled, a flight gets missed or something, it is a nightmare unless you've done it right. It's an absolute nightmare to try and figure that out. You will lose deposits on this. Mm. They'll cancel your bookings. You don't know who to call.
Especially in peak season.
Oh, man, it's a mess. Mm. But today, we've got David Cronier, who's the sales manager for Travel IT Global. Now, you remember, Travel IT is like the backbone through which all of this stuff happens. They've set up a system. It happened during COVID that the clever people over at Tourvest put together Travel IT so that they could seamlessly manage all of this stuff, especially if you're doing group bookings, if you're doing it with corporate travel. So I thought it would be a good idea to catch up with David and just to remind everybody, including those people who run their own businesses and who are in charge of this kind of stuff inside of companies, to help people understand how easy it could be. Because if you do it with them, you'll do it right. So David, are you there? How's it?
Morning.
Morning.
Yeah,
nice to see
me.
You. Yeah, thanks for making time for us this morning. It's always good to chat to you. And I think I explained pretty decently there how, you know, if you do it right, this can be an absolute pleasure. You can keep track of expenses, all kinds of other things that we'll get into in a minute. But if you do it wrong, it's a nightmare for anybody to try and manage this stuff. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I mean, the old adage of time is money. Well, actually, time is actually in motion. With travel, it's an emotional thing. You just mentioned when something goes wrong, you know, who do you call? What do you do? If you don't have that kind of backup or support structure in place, then it's a runaround. And as your guest just mentioned now, you know, peak season, something goes wrong. Everything's fine until something goes wrong. What do you do? Okay, well, the support structure is in place there from a travel perspective there. You have whether it be corporate or leisure. We try to simplify that whole kind of experience and make that, again, less emotional because you're on holiday at the moment or you're on a business trip. You don't exactly want to be stressed out for your entire trip. So we're kind of trying to make that process a little bit seamless, a little bit better for us. And the app, as you say, is something that's is crucial hand in hand for us. And I think that's probably where the focus is where we're going to be moving towards from a travel booking perspective.
Okay, so there's a little bit of sound issue going on here. I don't know if it's your mic or if it's feedback coming through there or whatever, but we can hear you. It's just it sounds a little bit
scratchy.
Like it's almost too loud.
Yeah, maybe just adjust your mic, David.
Yeah, just turn it down a little and then it shouldn't be distorting so much. Okay, so to help people understand it, you mentioned the app, and obviously what the last time we spoke about Travel IT, we were talking about Travel IT Global, which is where it's become something that's now, you know, going all over the world and really could serve as a blueprint if other companies are smart all over the world for how you could do travel in every which way. But what kinds of benefits do people get? I mean, tell me about these real-time notifications that, for example, you can get. The place where you don't have to carry your ticket around on paper anymore. You know, these are things that people don't understand. If you have vouchers and documentation for your trip, you don't want to be carrying around a big folder. Like you see these people who travel for the first time and they've got a big folder with 200 pages in it. They're trying to find
everybody's
the right
IDs.
And then they get to the counter and they're like, let me just have a look here. And they pull out like 15 papers and everyone's waiting behind them going, come on. You don't have to worry about that stuff with Travel IT Global, right?
No, I mean, that's the point of it. It all comes back to that time reference that I did a little bit earlier, time scalping, you know, little bits of microtransactions of time that you can save. And that one full of paper carbon slips from an expense point of view, that folder that we all used to carry around with your itinerary, with your three copies of your passport, everything like that is all sitting there. Look, it's always good to have a backup, but that's not your primary source of information. And with the app itself, you know, we want to try and, again, relay that information, process flow. Right, here's my boarding pass, here's my real-time notification update from a gate change, perhaps. I've got my direct integration with the likes of the SAP Airs or some other airlines that can get my passports, detail them, my boarding pass, etc. Just making that process kind of from start to finish a breeze. And that's the point of it.
And also, the same people who have these big piles of papers when they go to the airport, they're also the people who tend to lose their passports or they tend. And again, this is what your system does. It gives you a chance to fix the disaster that could occur because you have all this documentation and it's all electronically stored and it's on an app. It makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, would you mind if I just shared my screen? I'm obviously tapped into two different devices.
No, let's try. Let's try. Let's see what we got here. It's sharing screens. I suddenly feel like I'm in a Zoom meeting. Go for it, David. Let's see.
Unfortunately, I'm all the way down in Cape Town, so if I could be in your studio, it would be a lot better.
No, but listen, your sound has just improved, so I don't know what you did, but everything sounds much better now.
I think your mic was touching something.
Yeah.
Nice.
That sounds better now. Let's see if we can share screen here, and then you can take us through this. This is quite cool.
I do apologize. Give me a second. I just need to log in here quickly.
Okay.
Obviously, the things were leisure apps have been around for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I think from perspective of a corporate app, this is where we're cutting edge and at the forefront.
Tell me quickly while you're getting that ready. Is this a solution for individual travelers or for people who are making sort of group bookings for them and their friends, or is it only for corporate travel? Is it only something that can be used by, you know, a huge group of people that needs to be managed by someone? What would you say to people who want to use it as individuals?
No, absolutely. So there's two aspects of it. Obviously, from a SMEs that spend, you know, 10,000 rand a month on travel, up until your multinationals, your globals that spend, you know, 50 million a month. Doesn't make a difference for us. The point is how you utilize the system, and obviously we're trying to reduce what we call app fatigue. You know, the multiple emails to get your approvals or your expense app to do your expenses, booking platform on another platform. We try to bring it all into kind of one area. And the app itself is no longer just, you know, the app store started 2008, and it was the apps that were on the app store were very singular in kind of functionality. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is make this a massively multi-purpose function app from a bookability, from a profile management, from the ability to do expense claims. You just mentioned MICE and events, etc. So currently what we are releasing to market fairly soon is the ability to manage and book groups and incentives by the app itself.
Right.
So you can see a little bit events tab over here. So customized events that no longer require the specialist, you know, the dark arts of travel from many years ago or something where, if you didn't know what you're doing, you trusted them. It's like the doctor in the white coat.
Yeah.
They tell you something, all right, that's true, that's real, that's fine. But we kind of got to demystify the whole travel experience, be it from the mice, be it from expenses, be it from corporate. You know, COVID, I'll bring it back to COVID again, the dark times of COVID. And it was a terrible time for travel. There was nothing happening.
Yeah.
So what did we do? We released our developers. They were sitting in our basement. And said, no, come on, guys, come to the light.
What other products did you build?
And we spawned about 4 or 5 different businesses from COVID itself. And yeah, they had time to really focus on areas that were kind of in the peripheral. And again, if you have time, travel is going nowhere. Well, what can we do? What are these other products that we have that we can make them really, really, really good? I think that's where the kind of avenues have opened up. And
was that did you just flash that screen at us now? Because that's how it looks, right? So if you was that you guys? Okay. Correct. So David, just quickly, because we're almost out of time here, but I want to find out from you. Sure. This is a useful thing that people also will get the benefit of if they use you guys rather than try to do this in some old fashioned way or try to do it all themselves. Obviously, if you're doing corporate travel, you have per diems, you have a certain amount of expenses that the company has to take care of. And accounting for that can also be an absolute nightmare, right? So what this allows you to do is to take like a picture of your receipt wherever you are, and you put it up on the app, and then you don't have to worry about it again. You don't have to go back to the office when you get home and you've got a stack of papers like this and someone wants to know, you know, how long were you there and who was at the restaurant with you or whatever else. You have all the information. It's all right there, and it's easy for the accounting people to then go through and be able to pay you back whatever you're owed, company goes and puts into the books what they're owed, all that kind of thing is sorted out, right?
And there's also the kind of, you must understand the variables in the background that you have to abide by, which is company policy, all the kind of governance structure that you have in place. All of that is the built into the background. The traveler doesn't need to know about that. All they need to know is what their policy gradients allows. Fantastic. I can do this. And then we're running, again, AI is a bit of a lovely buzzword these days, but we've been running what I like to term a bit of dumb AI in the background for running things like optical character recognition, auto-signing of GL structures, etc. All the kind of good stuff in the background that the traveler doesn't need to know about. All they need to do is the ability to capture a receipt on the go, take a photo, upload it to obviously our cloud environments, and auto-signs things like the GL structure in the background, and then sends it off for approval, whatever your corporate approval structure is in place. So that seamless stroke of taking that, again, the journey of travel from booking to creating the expense on the fly. You could be in country, London, Barcelona, wherever you want to go, take a photo of your lunch and have your director or manager approve it before you even finish your cappuccino.
Amazing. Now, you see, this is the kind of stuff that AI should be doing. And frankly, that you guys have worked out. When it comes to travel, the last thing you want to worry about is any of the stuff we've spoken about now. You want to enjoy the trip. That's the whole point of going. So thank you, David. I really appreciate your time. I'm sorry we started off with a couple of sound issues, but it all seems to have been sorted. And I hope we'll see you again soon on the show. But there it is, the Travel IT Global Sales Manager. And you can check out the website, travel.co.za. You can find out what kind of dream holiday you'd like to go on. But you can also find out more about Travel IT. And if you've got any questions, you can just send them an email. They'll answer any of them. Whether you are a business owner, whether you're someone who works for a company, and maybe you're the one who is responsible for all this travel and you've got the headaches, well, we found a way to make it easier for you. So go and check it out, travel.co.za. That's us for the first hour. We'll be back, when I say us, me and Waris and James and Flex, who are
hiding in the back there.
Yeah, who knows what they're doing.
James, put your pants back on.
Really, Jesus, James, what is this? Any way to behave?
Honestly, what the hell?
We also got Gilly Apter joining us just now, and she's on the line from London. Gilly's one of the best comedians to come out of South Africa, and she has been all over the world in the last while. She hasn't stopped. She is happy to talk about anything, which is why we love having her on the show. You know her as well.
I do. Oh. You must ask her about the Green Day concert.
Okay. So we'll find out how Gilly is in just a short while. Stick around for that and a whole lot more.